de Jonathan Sexton.
Oh, il s'en fout tant
qu'il passe. C'est terrible. Il est là, Jonathan Sexton.
Oh, we're looking for another one. It's Canning once again, firing it in from near the sideline. It's a miracle shot. It's gone over the bar.
This is beyond cruelty. This is sadism at its worst. It is beyond belief that a team that gives so much that those fellas give today are on the wrong side of that result.
And fighting is there! Robbie Brady brings us all to our feet in Rio.
Welcome along to the build-up in association with Ladbrokes as we head into arguably the biggest sporting weekend of the year. My name is Mark Farrelly, and as always, I'm joined by Mick McCarthy, who's so excited for the next few days that he's already standing on his chair shouting at the television. Mick, if you could sit down for a minute here. We have to record this show. We need to get the people going, you know. It's a big weekend ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I will try and get the people going. You said that I've been shouting at TV. I've actually calmed down a little bit now. I've taken a mild sedative, and straight after this podcast, I'm going to go for a nice long sleep.
Give you a few spoons of Calpol.
Yeah, but it's okay, because when I wake up, I'll be all the closer to the massive sporting weekend. So
exactly. Look at this, Mick. Now, look, I'm going to go through this with you, right? If this doesn't get you excited, this is the Build Up podcast, of course, as we said, in association with Ladbrokes. So we preview the weekend's action. On Friday night, 8 p.m, the weekend gets off to a big start with Shamrock Rovers against Bowes. For the more rugby orientated of you, you've got France against Italy at the same time at 10 past 8. Then on Saturday at 12:30, Southampton against the crisis-laden Manchester United.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, I love a good Southampton-Man United match.
Yeah, United praying for a win, but more than that, they're praying that there'll be no penalties for them in it.
Which absolutely. And whenever United are in crisis, they seem to play Southampton and lose 6-3 wearing grey jerseys.
Exactly.
Okay, well, it happened once anyway.
2:30 p.m, Wales against Ireland. We're going to be talking to Stephen Ferris on the show later on, previewing what could be the I don't know what you describe it as.
Yeah.
The most, please God, don't let it happen again match in the history of Irish rugby.
I want to jump in on this one because this is the build-up, and, like, you know, we've got a section called Big Get Hyped, and basically everything is this is us positively look forward to a weekend. But as people will know, listeners will know, being a sports fan isn't always looking forward with excitement and positive thoughts. You can also look forward with absolute dread. And it's just as much part of being a sports fan. It's, I don't want to see that Ireland team playing rugby again. But I'm an Ireland fan and I have to watch them. And I have to hope that something has changed. And we'll talk to Stephen about whether that's possible or not in a few minutes. But again, it doesn't make it any less of a major part, possibly even a centrepiece of this weekend.
It's actually more. It's actually a more important match, I think, now.
Oh yeah.
After the England game.
Oh, if we'd gone out and taken care of England, we'd be like, oh, don't worry, Joe, pick a second team. I'm not even going to bother watching it.
Yeah.
Now we'll be all biting our fingernails all the way
exactly.
through.
Exactly. Then at 3 p.m, you've got Chelsea against Sheffield United is the pick of the 3 p.m. kickoffs. You can watch that or take a break, because then you've got at 5:30 Burnley against Liverpool. It's part of our 1-2-3 picks this week.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to put our opinions where our mouth is.
Our predictions where our mouth are.
I don't know what you'd call it.
No.
Sean Meehan will be in later on when we go through our 1-2-3 picks for the week.
Another one up for me last week. We'll get to that in a minute. But exactly. Just so you know.
7:45 p.m. Juventus against Napoli. There's a few nice Serie A games in particular this weekend as well. Then
the Maurizio Sarri derby. Is he back? Is he going to be on the sideline?
Oh yeah, Sarri. Yeah, he's going to miss it through illness.
Yeah. Oh shit. Okay.
6 p.m. Boxing from London. So this is a big one. You've got an undercard that is Charlie Edwards against Julio Cesar Martinez. You've got Huey Fury against Alexander Povetkin. But the main event, of course, is arguably the best boxer, probably the best pound for pound boxer in the world right now. Vasily Lomachenko takes on Luke Campbell. Later on in the show, we are delighted to say we're going to be joined by Jason Quigley. He's going to get us hyped for that fight. Explain to us just how good Lomachenko is and why he might be the greatest boxer of all time.
Yeah, and why this is one of those fights that you'll see a lot of ads for. But there's always something they're telling us to watch this weekend, you know, and you're kind of seeing the ads and go, oh, Lomachenko, yeah, God, I've been hearing a lot of good things about him. No, we're going to talk to Jason about exactly why. Enough of that next time. This is the time.
Exactly. Then on Sunday, right, so after you've stayed up to watch the Lomachenko fight, I think it should be on at a reasonable hour anyway, because it was in the UK, obviously, so I think around 10 to 10 p.m. is usually the ring time for the main event. But then on Sunday, lunchtime kickoff, 12 p.m. the Old Firm Derby, Rangers v Celtic. Another one of a 1-2 free picks for this week, and it's going to be a difficult one because these ties are getting closer and closer every season.
That Ibrox as well.
Yeah, exactly. So that'll be we'll be chatting about that later on, obviously giving our predictions. And then of course at 3:30 p.m. Kerry against Dublin, the All Ireland final. Mick, this week we've been tasked with coming up with a couple of predictions for this. And I, for one, I'm actually confident in my picks.
Right, okay.
I'm pretty confident.
I'm not going to give anything away just yet.
Yeah, we will chat about that later on in the show as well, of course. And then, obviously, at 4:30 p.m, you've got the North London Derby.
Mark, Arsenal against Tottenham. We're actually out of time here, and we have to wrap up the show.
This has only just gone through
what's coming up. Arsenal and Spurs.
Yeah, exactly.
Derby Sunday, wow.
And then, speaking of Derby Sunday, at 5 p.m, Lazio against Roma. In Serie A, the biggest derby arguably in Serie A. 8 p.m, you got Villarreal against Real Madrid.
Hold on now. What's Milan wrong? Derby is a bigger derby than the Rome derby.
Sorry, when I say biggest, it's probably like the, what would you call it? The most derby.
Vitriolic.
Yeah.
Derby, okay, yeah, I'm with Syria. You. Okay, back on track here, Mark. You go, what's after that match?
Less vitriolic derby, Villarreal against Real Madrid. And then the most vitriolic derby of them all, it's the Sunday game at 9:30 p.m. where Joe Brawley will no doubt be arguing with Kieran Whelan. So what a weekend. That's one way to wrap it up.
You think of it like it's All-Ireland weekend. I don't know. It's just, it's beyond belief, really, because actually this used to be All-Ireland Hurling Final weekend, but that was always international break and quiet and nothing kind of on for it. But suddenly the football gets thrown into it, the GAA mess up their calendar, and it just gets launched into what some sort of revamped world sporting calendar that's seemingly the busiest that we've ever seen.
It's unbelievable. So we get into the all our previews. So
actually just put in a phone call to the wife and cancel the plans for Friday and Saturday. I'm already working all day on Sunday just so that I can watch sport. But
While you do that, I remind listeners that if this is your first time listening to The Build Up, be sure to please subscribe. You can find us by searching balls.ie podcasts on all good podcast apps, or indeed search The Build Up on balls.ie and you'll find the Build Up only feed. But as we said, we're about to chat to Stephen Ferris about Wales v Ireland, but first of all, Mick, we've got to have a quick look back at last week to see if any of our predictions actually came through.
Yeah, I don't know. Not quite anger. Look, Ladbrokes aren't exactly knocking down the door, cancelling the podcast because of our predictions. We haven't bankrupted them quite yet or anything like that. But we haven't done too badly. I will say, luckily, Stephen Ferris has been doing a pretty good job for us. You know, he actually knows something about sport. And Mark, I have to say, your golf predictions are keeping us alive. We're going to get to that in a second. If it was, but that golf predictions are keeping us in the black here.
What I don't know about golf isn't worth knowing. That's basically what we've discovered over the last 2 weeks.
You don't know much about football because what we had here was you had Brighton and Southampton to be a draw, I think. That was, well, whatever.
I had Brighton, Southampton to finish 2-1 to somebody. I was adamant that this game was going to finish 2-1 to either Southampton or Brighton, which is why I went then for over 2.5 goals. And I would like the record to show that it finished 2-0 to Southampton, but Lewis Dunk had a goal disallowed, which, only for that, I would have been nailed on, not only in over 2.5 goals, but also in the fact that I was going to finish 2-1.
We have some wins for you at the basket later. Take your beatings here, okay? You went for West Brom Derby to be a draw.
I went for West Brom.
West Brom to beat Derby, sorry, because for some reason you just hate Derby. So you're wasting punters' picks here.
Can you please refer to them by their proper title?
Sorry, formerly Frank Lampard's Derby County.
No, formerly Frank Lampard's Derby County, Philip Cuckoo's Derby County.
Cork and Dublin, the All-Ireland Ladies semi-final, was not a draw at 9-1. Dublin won that by 2 goals. It was close to a draw in the other match, but we didn't pick that.
Yeah, it was very exciting. The two games, the other match, Mayo thought they had a free in right at the death, but it turned out it was a free out for 2 hops, which was a great call by the referee. But for the Dublin game, I mean, it was close. Like first half, I was going, geez, this is still a draw written all over it. But then Cork spent the majority of the second half with somebody in the sin bin. And they had 2 yellow cards. It was during the second half. So Dublin just started to pull away. They wore them down eventually. Siobhan McGrath was phenomenal. She was unbelievable. She was everywhere. But also wanted to chat about it. I know she got player of the match. But Sinead Goldrick, it's just last week we chatted about Sinead O'Hearn being up there with Cora Staunton as one of the best ladies hoppers of all time. But Goldrick has to be in the conversation because she's a brilliant defender, but she's also just bombs forward it. So when Cork were putting people behind the ball, trying to slow down the Dublin attack, it was usually Goldrick making that line break. And whatever about Croke Park on Sunday, they could have done with her in Twickenham on Saturday, because she made more line breaks than that whole Ireland team put together.
Or the CJ Sander anyway. Yeah, look, she there's times you watch her, she's a complete footballer. Like, you watch her and think, like, Jesus, like Jack McCaffrey, you know. And then other times it's like she's holding the centre, playing the, you know, being playmaker, basically, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
the quarterback. People laugh at you when you say that about Gaelic footballers, Mark. And look, back to where we did last week, we didn't get that right. But look, you know, Stephen Ferris did pick England -5. I think it could have been England -50 if they wanted it to be. So he got that right. That was a 10-11 winner. He didn't. We also kind of forced him to pick England between 6 and 10 points, which obviously didn't come off. But Stephen with two picks out of the 2 weeks we've had him on so far. So interesting to see what he goes with this week. But really, really good start for him. And Mark, I don't know what's going on here, but for 2 weeks you've been banging on about golf and about the FedEx Cup and about the Tour Championship. You had an each way winner with Matsuyama in the BMW, and then this week you were all about Xander Schauffele, and in he comes second again, another massive each way winner. What did we my get? What was he again?
He was 28-1. So buddy Xander coming in. Like, the other thing that really annoyed me was that I had another tip that I forgot to say on the show, which was that Patrick Cantlay has a terrible record in Georgia, and that he was going in. I think he was second or third in the FedEx rankings, which meant he was, you know, starting on 800 or 600 or whatever it was. And I was like, stay away from Cantlay. Sure enough, he had a mare on the Saturday and Sunday, finished well outside the each way results or placings. But Xander Schauffele, I mean, Rory was the story of the weekend. I said if anyone's interested, Rory is favoured to win over 72 holes.
Mm.
Not only did he win over 72 holes, he won the entire thing.
Yeah.
I just didn't really tip it, didn't put my money where my mouth was.
Yeah.
But Xander Schauffele, I'm happy with that.
You're not gonna apologise to me about your golf tips, Marcus. They've been pretty good.
Exactly.
And unfortunately for you, the season has kind of died down for a few weeks now. But don't worry,
we'll see about that in the big shout later on.
Okay,
because maybe I found a little something.
Little something. Okay, fair enough. But look, that's how we got on. I'd say, you know, a bit of a mixed bag, really.
Yeah, only for myself and Stephen, really. We're holding this whole thing together, which leads us on perfectly to chatting to guess who?
Stephen Ferris.
Let's preview Ireland versus Wales. Stephen, last week we were chatting and you were saying to us that the one thing we didn't want from the England game was to ship a heavy defeat. And we were all kind of hopeful that Ireland weren't far off hitting form. After that game, how far do you think we are now?
Yeah, well, I think it was ship a heavy defeat and also pick up an injury. And both of those happened, obviously, with a Cian Healy injury. Nobody really understands the extent of that. And then, obviously, a huge thrashing at the hands of our archenemy, England, who, it wasn't so long ago, we beat them in Twickenham and won a Grand Slam. How things can change so quickly in professional rugby. So, oh yeah, like, I was over the game, I was working at it. It was just so deflating to watch, you know, seasoned pros get absolutely demolished. Like, and there was no answers for it. Like, you know, when England scored a try in the second half, you know, the lads were gathering underneath the post, and you just see the likes of, you know, Stockdale and Bundiaki and Ringrose just looking around for answers, and nobody had any answers. And just seemed like one of those days to forget and draw a line in the sand, try and fix things this week in training, especially the line out, and then, you know, try and put it to the back of your mind, because it's something that could possibly leave a lot of scar tissue there going forward.
Yeah, like the line out, there are things like that and tactical things like that that obviously malfunctioned, but something like, say, for instance, we had 21 missed tackles in the first half alone. I think we had 34 overall. Explain to us, where does that come from? Like, is that an individual thing that there's a lot of guys off their game, that's contagious maybe throughout the team, or is it more of a systematic malfunction?
I think it's a bit of both, but in saying that, if you miss one tackle, it's going to leave you exposed somewhere else. You know, as soon as a team gets in behind you, it's a lot easier to expose the likes of Stockdale or Bundy, and, you know, those other missed tackles come along. And I think straight away after the English game, everybody was talking about Jacob Stockdale, how poor he is in defence, and he makes the wrong decisions, and, you know, those old demons coming back to haunt him again, like they did maybe 18 months, 2 years ago when he first came on the scene for Ireland about his defensive capabilities. And when you go through it and you go over the videotape again and you look at the system that Ireland are trying to play, and you look at, I think it was against Wales, they were kind of coming up and in, and then sometimes on Saturday a couple of lads were going soft and then somebody would hit in and leave somebody else hanging dry. And to be honest, when it comes to that, it's just all about everybody doing their own things and not working through the system, not working as a collective. And if you're not working as a collective in the back line, you can forget about it. You really got to match them up front. You got to stop them on the game line. The CJ Sander missed the tackles. I think Henderson missed a couple. And you just got to make your first up hits, and that makes the rest of everybody else's jobs a hell of a lot easier. So to answer your question, it's a bit of both, you know, to try and fix things. Sometimes it's a mentality thing. And you know, Ireland just weren't at the races when it came to having the mentality right at the weekend.
Stephen, you played in a lot of teams with Ulster and Ireland that would have been on various, you know, levels of form over, you know, you'd be maybe struggling in one team, going well in the other. How much of it is a mental issue that might be, you know, we're talking about those missed tackle stats, but that they were astonishing. But what even was more noticeable to me was that we were almost tackling soft. Every time England, you know, wanted to hit the gain line, they could get, you know, 4 or 5 yards on the tackle. Obviously go forward, ball quick. It just seemed like the players were playing with their head down a little bit, maybe after the first 20 minutes. I mean, you've been in these situations where things might be going well. Is there a mental block that comes on a team where they feel like nothing they can do is right and it just makes them play all the worse?
Yeah. I suppose, lads, there was nothing on the line at the weekend. You know, it wasn't in competition. It's a friendly. So straight away, the mentality is going to be different before the match. In the week leading up to the match, your mentality is going to be different. Of course it is. But at the same time, there's got to be a level of professionalism when it comes to actually doing your job on the day of that game. It's a test match, and Rory Vest and the rest of the lads kind of held their hands up after the game and says, we were not good enough. And you know, for us not to be good enough is unacceptable. And I think on reflection after the game, they will be highly disappointed with the level of physicality that they showed, the level of commitment. And, you know, that has to change getting into this Welsh game. But you know what, lad? I think this didn't all start 2 or 3 days before the English game or 20 minutes into the English game. Like, if you watched the Italian game, it was exactly the same. It was horrendous.
Yeah,
like there was no energy at all. There was no buzz. There was no atmosphere. There was no big hits coming in. I know I talked about it a couple of weeks ago with you lads about you know, making game-changing moments and you know, trying to make a name for yourself. There was none of that again at the weekend. And if that doesn't happen against Wales in Cardiff this coming weekend, then you know, these alarm bells are just going to get louder.
Definitely, and there's a sense of like 2007, I know you remember well, like, and that was in the World Cup where that was happening, where it was like the Namibia and the Georgia games, and it just felt like a funk. You were like, every week it was going to be, oh, we'll be out of it this week, but it never really happened. Yeah. And it's a very hard thing to pull yourself out of, and luckily this is earlier, as you mentioned last week, than it was in 2007 when it was actually on top of the World Cup. But what, like, players don't become bad players overnight is one of the oldest cliches in the world, because it's true. Same thing with coaches. Joe Schmidt's not going out with no game plan or, you know, a poor game plan all of a sudden. But yet Ireland are in a situation where we're kind of, you know, going back to type when in possession, say, even if you take the terrible defence out of it of, you know, throwing it to the standing receiver who's too deep and so on and so forth. CJ Sander not getting any carries in the game is just beyond belief, really, for a number 8 like Sander.
Yeah.
Like, there's something wrong there. Like, from you watching, I know you were on the sideline as well, it's guys, you have a different almost perspective. Is it like a different, is it the, I don't know. I just find it really hard to understand that Ireland, under one of the best coaches nearly ever, we think, could go out with seemingly no game plan.
Well, and this is the thing, you're struggling to try and put it into words to ask me the question of what's going wrong.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
because everybody is just baffled at what happened at the weekend. Like, honestly, I was on my way out of Twickenham, and there was Irish fans that were saying, that's an absolute disgrace. I've paid big money to jump on a plane from Dublin here this morning, come over, go to the match, pay your match ticket, a number of drinks on the way, and get a flight home again. And they were, it wasn't like they, you know, had went to Twickenham for a good day out. They were absolutely furious. They were fuming. And if Ireland don't buck up their ideas, then they're going to have this a lot more. They need to put in performances. They need to put in commitment levels that are going to give all the travelling support, all the fans, everybody that's going to be watching on the TV come the 22nd of September against Scotland, belief. And at the minute, there is no belief. And why is there no belief? It's because of the level of performance. And that started a couple of weeks ago against Italy. Now, I was chatting to a couple of people before the game that were out in Portugal. And the lads had the legs run off them. They were training really, really hard in that week. And I was like, well, you know, with the 23 lads that were involved in the game, were they training as hard as everybody else? And the answers were yes. So, you know, post-game, there was the heavy-leggedness chat from Joe Smith. There was, you know, a bit of fatigue crept in. I definitely think that this Ireland team, it almost looked like it was the end of the season and they were completely burnt out. That's the way they kind of look. So, fingers crossed, there's a lot of downtime this week. Sometimes less is more when it comes to training. And they get the energy back, they get the buzz back. And, you know, against Wales, I think everybody, all we want to see is commitment and physicality. And, you know, playing for your country, it means a hell of a lot. I know that, it means a hell of a lot. And, you know, just go out there and express yourself. And if they do that, then we'll put in a performance that every Irish fan can be proud of.
I was on that note, actually, and like, obviously there's a lot more needs fixing in terms of game plans and the like, but could this be, in a weird way, a small bit of a positive thing for Ireland, that they can get together now, you know, they create a bit of a siege mentality in the camp. Nobody's given us a hope going into this World Cup. Nobody's even given us a hope going into this weekend, that there's that kind of thing that we're going to show them.
Yeah. A couple of mates of mine said to me after the Six Nations campaign that it almost felt like something needed to happen within the Irish team for it to like shake it up. So, like, you know, whether it be a punch thrown in training or whether it be, you know, something just to spark something and to kind of galvanize this group of players again. Now, is that a 57 point to 15 drumming by England that might actually say, okay, lads, this is the reality of it. If we don't perform, this is the level of competition that we're going to come up against in the World Cup. And this is, you know, this is unacceptable. So maybe that performance at the weekend is one that they can use to their advantage getting into the World Cup, because they know if they're off the mark by 5 or 10%, that they're going to be in the wrong end of the result. Maybe, as you say, you know, this week might be a time of reflection to kind of call one another out. You know, hold your fellow colleagues accountable for making mistakes. Make people feel that their jersey and their shirt isn't sewn onto their back and that they can be dropped. And, you know, I think this week is going to be a very, very tough week for some boys in that group and that squad. But if you don't do that, then, you know, the same things are going to keep happening. And I think Joe Smith's the type of guy that won't sit well with a performance like that. And you know what, I think there's a good number of those players as well that won't sit well with either. So please God, fingers crossed that the lads go out and, you know, really do make up for that abysmal performance the weekend.
We won't ask you who the person most likely to throw the punch in training would be, but I presume it's Johnny Sexton. what about Wales then? So, like, I think that's going to be one of the most interesting team selections that we'll see, because, you know, there was probably a plan for this last week that would have been different than what it's going to be now after what happened. We saw Joe Schmidt come out unexpectedly to face the media yesterday. They know that this isn't, like, they're not trying to hide behind, oh, it's only preseason, don't worry about it. They're fully admitting that things aren't right. Do you expect him to go out and throw these guys out to the wolves again? Here's close to my first team. What have you got, lads? Prove yourself. Or, you know, is it a case of some of you are going to have your jerseys taken off you here, and we're going to see what the other guys can do?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think guys like Rory Best, Peter Romani will want to go again. There's a certain element of pride, you know, redemption that they want to have. So, you know, I think they'll want to step up to the plate again, and, you know, they'll not want to miss a week after the performance that they've had. So I think James Ryan will come back into the fold. Andrew Porter obviously was up for media duty, so will he start this weekend? Possibly. And then I would like to see Tank Byrne get a start. I was sitting thinking on the plane on the way home after Saturday's performance. If we get the World Cup quarter final and we come up against a big physical New Zealand team or South African team, would it be out of the realms to play Tank Byrne at 6, Peter Romani at 7, and Conan at 8? You know, is that something that Joe Smith would like to think about? Well, if he is thinking along the same lines as me or some of the other people out there, then he's got to do it now. You got to experiment. You got to throw different combinations out. And you look at what Eddie Jones did at the weekend with playing Curry and Underhill. They performed so well with each other. The combinations were great. Owen Farrell playing 12 and George Ford playing 10. It just seemed to work. And different things are going to work against different opposition. So if Joe's thinking that way in terms of trying to get combinations that are going to work throughout the World Cup for different games, then he's got to try it now. He can't wait until the Scotland game or, you know, the Japan game or Russia game or whatever. He's got to think about it now.
You probably got to target this as a game as well that you've got to go all out to win. Like last week we were talking about just, you know, you want a decent performance, but even just to quell some of that fear and the anxiety that we have going into this World Cup now, that this is a game that you really have to target, that to get as, if not at least a win, but get as close as possible to Wales.
Perform at some kind of standard for 60 minutes or whatever, isn't it?
Well, lads, I don't know how you feel. Like, my expectations aren't that high when it comes, you talk about getting a result, you know, going away to Wales in Principality Stadium to get a result there is bloody tough. So you're saying it's all, possibly it could all be about the result and just grinding out a victory over there. To be honest, I would take a 10-point loss, but actually have a really, really good performance and then try and back that really, really good performance up the following week and try and end the World Cup warm-up series campaign on a high and with a win. But I would much prefer that than, you know, have a pretty dismal performance, but, you know, just grind out a slog. 2-point win. I'd love to see a half-decent performance by this Irish team, because it feels like an eternity since we last had one.
Yeah, Wales 1-10 point win is 9-5 on Ladbrokes. I know that's kind of what we went with England last week, and they they made a joke out of it, but
now, lads, don't be going down there. Now, I said just go with the spread.
You did actually, yeah. We kind of forced you into the 6-10, I think, a little bit. Yeah, we've already given you the win on that earlier in the podcast, anyway. So it was a half and half. But yeah, you're two tips out of two for us this week. But I don't know if that's what you're looking at. Obviously, Ireland are plus 4, which, you know, seems like, you know, I don't know, Wales minus 4 after the performance we saw last week. Like, don't forget, Wales do have those kind of, like, have that game against England, as we mentioned it briefly last week, that was, you know, close to test level. We saw England again were close to test level, if not beyond it, last week, and we were just the ones who weren't. In our two games so far, we're rambling along while the other teams are up to pace.
Yeah. I think team selection's going to have a lot to play in terms of what way I would go with this game. I just can't see Ireland going with another really poor display, the lack of energy that I've already talked about and the commitment. I just can't see that. And there's too much pride at stake here. So I think that Wales are going to win this match. They've got a bit of momentum behind them. By how much? I'd probably go a score, 5-7 points. So I would probably go with a spread on that in Wales' favour.
Just lastly as well, looking ahead to the World Cup as a whole, one thing, I don't want to sound like Mike Bassett's assistant and Mike Bassett, England manager, but what about England? Like, that, they are looking serious contenders now, and you've got it. I don't know what you're thinking in terms of, you've obviously got the likes of New Zealand, South Africa, but I can't see that England team looked like men against boys, obviously, at times, and maybe that a lot of that is down to just how good England are.
Yeah, I was standing on the sideline, guys, and honestly, the size, the sheer size of those English players was astonishing. And I was just looking at Billy Vunipolo and saying, thank Lord I am not out there trying to tackle that guy. Because the size of him, like Sam Underhill was probably the smallest English forward on the pitch. And he had muscles popping out of every orifice of his body. He was just absolutely huge. And, you know, when it comes to it, guys, you know, rugby is a strong, big, physical sport. And if you generally have a much bigger physical team, it's going to be a hard day at the office. And, you know, I think a lot of teams are going to struggle against England just because of their sheer size. Like I told you, he was just, the game that he had, he was monumental.
Outrageous.
It's just ridiculous, like. And you know, there's a lot to be said for our athletes when it comes to professional rugby. Unfortunately for us Irish, you know, the English seem to have a lot more of those in their squad. So, you know, fair play to England. They played a really fast-paced game. Eddie Jones mentioned about wanting to have a lot more passing in their game, and that's why he picked 4-10. That seemed to work great. But you had your forwards doing the hard yards and burst through the tackles, giving you really good quick ball. So, but then flip the coin over. How bad were Ireland? You know, were England actually that good? Were they unreal? Were they the best thing from sliced bread, or did Ireland make it look like that?
Yeah, England 5-1 to win the World Cup. Still behind New Zealand, South Africa. Ireland still 7-1 on Ladbrokes ahead of Wales. I think you know.
Wait the next week.
Yeah, exactly. Wait till next week.
Next week, before putting your money on Ireland.
It's funny, I was going to say, like, I just would be interested in that England 5-1. I know it's funny because we can't, on one hand, talk about how terrible Ireland were and how we weren't at the races, and at the other hand, talk up England like as if they beat a world-class team playing at a world-class level, you know? But they were so good. It's funny because me and Mark both immediately mentioned the Toji when we were talking about this on Monday, and then you brought him up there. It's like, I don't know if there's a... You know, a forward yourself, like to have somebody like that who can do all of the second row duties and to be so good and do the basically a back row's work on the ground as well. Like, it's just such a benefit to the team. And if you look at the basically playing 2 sevens plus a Toji plus Vinipola, who's pretty good on the ground as well, like England are just going to be a nightmare to keep the ball against, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure. Even Marco Vinipola, he gets himself fit.
Yeah.
He started as well. He gets a bit of a ground ball. You look at the carriers that they have, like the car, and this is something that concerns me with Ireland. At the weekend, who's our biggest ball carrier in the pack? Generally, usually, CJ Sander. He did many times that he carried the ball twice the whole game or something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then you're looking at Cian Healy and Tadhg Furlong. I know I mentioned this in previous shows, but you look at the English team, a stark contrast. You know, every single one of their forwards can carry the ball and give you go forward. So, like, yeah. It's madness to think of the talent and the size and physicality of the English boys and what they have at their disposal. But fair play to Eddie Jones. This is what he's been working towards this last couple of years. And if you can remember the pressure that he was on not so long ago, and everybody was calling for his head, how he's turned things around and made sure that he's picking for the right time.
Yeah, hopefully next week, Stephen, when we chat, it'll be on a lot more positive note. But thanks very much for taking the time to talk.
Fingers crossed. Cheers, lad. Thanks for joining.
Mark, England 5-1 for the World Cup is just interesting me in this kind of horrible way. I don't want to back England for the World Cup, but they're so bloody good at the moment. And it's just like, it's like they've been primed for this, whereas we tried to win Six Nations in between the World Cups. And
yeah, the talk and all the chat, obviously, since the match has been the bit of a scutcheon we got at the hands of them in the second half. But like, what really caught my eye in the first half was the first 20 minutes, I thought we played quite well, but I just couldn't get over how good England was. It was one of those where you're kind of going, geez, our lads are going at it here. There's a big improvement from the Italy game, but England are just so quick off the line. They're so, as Stephen was saying, they are so physically imposing that I was like, this is men against boys. And like, you're saying men against boys, and the boys are... If they walked into any room in Ireland, they'd be the biggest person in the room.
Yeah, and too laggy, just running over blokes. But like, you kind of, like, you don't expect them to do it that much. But even Johnny May is like, and not only, like, obviously he kind of knocked out Conor Murray, nobody wanted to see that, but 3 or 4 times before that he'd done it as well, just kind of knocked over lads and run through them, you know. And that's just Johnny May. Like, he's a big winger, but he's still a winger, you know. It's just, oh, they're scary. But anyway, I just think it's kind of sad that I'm already looking at how other teams are going to get on the World Cup and looking at their prices and stuff like that, because I hate to say I've given up on Ireland, because I certainly haven't, but I'm so down on it at the moment. It was just, it was really dispiriting. Like, I actually turned off the match at 50-10. I was thinking, there's nothing more to watch here. Why am I wasting my Saturday? And that's just not a good place to be.
No, but that being said, you know, like we're saying, you don't become bad players overnight. They are now going into the World Cup as underdogs that we'll all be hoping.
Fourth favourites.
Yeah, I suppose that way. But in our minds.
Yeah. And in our hearts.
Exactly. And hoping that they can pull off something. And speaking of underdogs, we'll be hoping they can pull off something big. This weekend, the All-Ireland Football Final, Kerry against Dublin. Let's preview it. So obviously we're going to have our main preview show on Friday in the Three Man Weave podcast, Mick, where we get in depth and talk about all the tactical nuances of the game. And speaking of tactical nuances, we've already got a special Three Man Weave podcast up this week already. We went up on Wednesday, where we chatted to Rob Carroll, one of the premier GA statisticians in the game. And we kind of delved into the ins and outs of GA stats and stuff to look out for in this weekend's game. But today, it's up to me and you to make some bold predictions. Have you got some bold predictions? Because I certainly do. Well, actually, maybe they're not that bold, but I think they're going to happen.
Let's hear what you got going on here.
Right. Well, first of all, and this is simple, straightforward, the handicap on Ladbrokes for Dublin is -5. They're 4-5 at -5. I think that's a gimme.
A gimme? You think that it's going to be that one-sided All-Ireland final?
I think what we've found in recent years, especially this year, is that for a game to not be one-sided against Dublin doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be closer than 6 points. Like, they've beaten everybody by more than 5 points since they played Tyrone in the Super 8s last year. They won that by 3 points. They beat Donegal by 5 points exactly in the Super 8. So you're talking over 12 months since somebody kept Dublin to 6 points or less. I just can't see past that. That -5, I think, is a generous handicap.
Okay, I do think that Dublin will probably win by more than 5 points, which is probably on a 10-11 shot. That's kind of all you need, is just that. But I've a feeling that Kerry could give them a game here, and I think when Dublin, as we've seen in All Ireland finals against Mayo when it's happened, they can get drawn into battles, you know. And I think, look, we do all think that Dublin are improving, but we also don't know what Kerry are going to be like at this sort of this level. This is a brand new Kerry team. There's 1975 potential about this Kerry team, you know. I think the Kerry man had an article actually kind of suggesting the same that I just saw the headline of this week, but I was thinking the same thing. It's like there is this kind of this young Kerry team that could come true, and we don't know really what they're made of yet, because they've been finding themselves as the year's gone on. They've got better as the year's gone on, and I'm just not fully on board with it, I have to say.
But the way for me as well, looking at it, is it's win-win. Either it's 6 points or more and I'm right, or it's a close game and we're in for a classic and I'm going to be happy either way.
Okay.
What about this other one? The other one I've looked at, and it's really caught me, he's the favourite, but he's still 6-1, is Conor Callaghan to get the RT man of the match.
Okay.
Conor Callaghan, if Dublin play well, he's been the fulcrum of everything they've done well the last few games. He obviously got the two goals against Mayo. He's 11-8 to score any time this weekend. He's actually, He might as well double that up with Dublin to win as well, which is 13-8. He's 9-2 to score two or more goals. But of all those, like, he may have a brilliant game and not get any goal. So for me, 6-1, man of the match, seems more interesting.
Okay. Is that everything?
That's everything.
Okay, I'm with you on Con. My worry a little bit about the Con thing is that he has been the player of the championship so far in so many ways that I often wonder whether that translate often into the final. Usually what happens then in the final is that someone like Paul Mannion will come and have the game of his life. And you saw it even with the hurling. It was like it's been Seamus Callan all year for Tipperary. Now, it's not as if he had a bad All-Ireland final or anything like that. He got 1-3. But no, McGrath suddenly just gets man the match in the semi and the final, and he's probably going to win Hurler of the Year now, you know? And you just wonder, it's normally somebody's day to shine that you don't fully expect it to be. I think if Conn goes and wins man of the match, like, he is nailed on Footballer of the Year. It's kind of an interesting one in general, you know? But I expect someone like Paul Mannion or, you know, someone like Dean Rock, I actually think could be... Maybe he never catches the eye enough to go and win a man in the match award, but I think Dean Rock could have a good game and could actually sneak some of the scores away. Speaking of the scores, though, I do think there'll be goals in this game.
Yep, agree.
So I think that Kerry need goals. And it's funny, I was listening to Andy Moran doing his retirement interview yesterday with Richie Sadlier, and he was talking about like a moment after Lee Keegan scored where he had, you know, his plan with a ball that was coming out was to turn and score a goal. You know what I mean? That's like which was really an interesting thing to me, actually. We'll probably talk about that a little bit more on Friday's show, about the idea that a guy can see a ball coming in and know exactly what he's going to do, has the plan for how he's going to score. And Johnny Cooper made the tackle before he got to the ball. But I think these teams know now goals are the way to do it. You have to put them away when you get the chance. And I think with the likes of Clifford, with the likes of Gainey, Stephen O'Brien, you know, Kerry have goal scorers. And I think that that's what they're aiming for. And I think that Dublin, I can't see them not getting a goal in a game. I think there'll be three goals in this game.
Three goals or three or more?
No, three.
Exactly.
On the dot. 11-4. I think Kerry will get two. I think Dublin will get one. And I think Dublin will win the game by scoring about 7 or 8 points more than...
I really like your thought process there in the goals. Yeah. I would go for... I think there could be more than three. I think there will be three. If the weather is good, that's another thing. I think if it's a rainy, shitty day, you might not get that. It mightn't be as high scoring and as free flowing.
Yeah.
But I would say... three or more for me, and I think actually Dublin will get more goals than Kerry because Kerry might be chasing the game or whatever and open up slightly at the back, and Dublin seem to score so many goals in the last 10-15 minutes of a game.
Possibly. If you go over 2.5 goals, which would be three or more, that's 8-13. So it's kind of that's kind of what's expected. Over 3.5, if you want to think there's going to be four, it's 3-2. So I just like the idea. I think there will be goals. I think they're both goal-scoring teams. But I think that All-Ireland Finals, there will be a certain clamminess to the occasion. And that might not just be the weather that, you know, comes into it. That might not be... If in the Dublin-Kerry match you look at it and say, I think there'll be four or five goals, I think you have to cut one off. And that's why I'm going for three. But, you know, we're here to put our heads in the line. We'll know come Sunday evening.
Yep, exactly.
One more then, Mark. I'm going to go... Morris had a really, really good logic for the first time we did this with the Mayo-Dublin match of Mayo kind of coming out and giving it everything, Dublin sort of assessing the situation a little bit, readjusting at halftime and coming out and putting the game away. He called it very much so. The only thing, obviously, nobody could have called was the 10 minutes of mortal combat that Dublin engaged in after the game, which put Mayo away. But he went for Mayo full-time, Mayo half-time, Dublin full-time. And that's something that is interesting to me in this, if you just replace, obviously, Mayo with Kerry. I don't think that Kerry will be cast aside quite in the way that Dublin will, but I can't see Dublin not finding a way to win this game. But I do see Kerry coming out with a very, very strong game plan. You know, a few set pieces, you know, like, you know, it's funny, it doesn't work quite this way in Gaelic football, but in the NFL, they'll say, right, a team can go out there and be brilliant for the first 18 to 25 plays of an offensive thing because they are all set beforehand. That's what they've practiced all week. And then they start going ad hoc after that. I think it can be a similar thing as like, here's the way we're going to play this half. Here's the few moves that we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do with the kickouts. And I think that Kerry will have all that target. And I think Dublin will be confident enough to just let the game play out and see how it goes, you know? So that's kind of why I would fancy Kerry to be going in, running into the Hogan stand at half time, sprinting, you know, saying, we've got this. And Dublin just calmly taking it easy, coming out, sticking to their game plan and just finding a way to win.
What's draw half-time, Dublin full-time?
Sorry, the Kerry half-time, Dublin full-time, by the way, is 9-2. The draw half-time, Dublin full-time is 12-1 on Ladbrokes. That's It's a tasty number, Mark, but there's probably a reason it's 12 to 1 as well.
Yeah, it's just when you talk about our interview with Rob Carroll, he mentioned about the trying to turn your possession, the amount of possessions you have, you have to get scores away. I think that's going to be easier for Kerry in the opening half before fatigue sets in and then maybe that Dublin start to overrun them. I also think that it could end up being similar to the Mayo game where the two teams are kind of eking each other out and Kerry want to make sure to still be in this game at halftime, which is exactly kind of your argument as well, but just maybe that they don't get out in front. But that being said, I think I'm not going to spread myself too thin here. I'm going to stick with Conor Callaghan man of the match and Dublin to beat the handicap.
I have one more before we finish.
You must have about 15 at this stage.
Mark, this is my third.
So look, if you make enough predictions, you can't be wrong, what?
Well, hold on now. You've gone with Dublin minus 5. You've gone Conn man of the match, 6-1. I've gone for Kerry half-time, Dublin full-time. I've gone for 3 goals, and I'm going to have one more pop at it, if you don't mind. It's only my third. Three goals. I've written down a score for this game. I've written down another score for this game. Both of them feasible, both what I kind of think is going to happen. Both of them added up to 41 points randomly. I think that sounds about right to me. I think that you're looking at possibly 3 goals, as I said before. If you take that, that's 31 points scored, you know, over the bar points. I think that sounds about right in a game that, you know, the weather could be bad. As I said, there's the clamminess of an All-Ireland final in general. Under 41.5 points is 10 to 11 on Ladbrokes. I do like that, I have to say. And that's kind of one of the picks that I'm going to make.
Interesting. I don't know if I'm going to take you up on that one. So there are a couple of picks. If you are having a bet over the weekend on the All-Ireland final, or indeed any of the sport we're chatting about on today's podcast, be sure to gamble responsibly. This is obviously just a bit of fun. And especially when it comes to GAA, everybody will know that Mick doesn't know anything and that my main sport is, of course, golf. So Mick, as we mentioned earlier on in the podcast, before Sunday, before that big day of sport, on Saturday night, you've got Vasily Lomachenko against Luke Campbell. Everybody will know Luke Campbell from beating John Zonevan in the Olympics in 2012 in the Olympic final. He's gone on to have a stellar professional career. Vasily Lomachenko is a 2-time Olympic gold medalist, has gone on. He's had quite the professional career, to say the least. He's a 3-weight world champion.
The Matrix.
Arguably the greatest boxer of all time. This is our segment.
That's an amazing thing to say because he's had 17, I think, is it, or 18 professional fights? But
he's a 3-weight world champion.
Absolutely, that's what I mean. You're like, it sounds like I was pulling you up there on a ludicrous statement, but I'm absolutely not.
Also, his amateur background.
Yeah.
396 wins, 1 loss. He must have been fighting about 20 lads a day. He's incredible. Now, a lot of people, you know, if you're not big into boxing, you haven't been paying much attention to him. We always say here that it's mad that a lot of these boxers, the likes of Lomachenko, is a perfect example of it, where you're only really start paying attention to him as he's already nearly achieved all these things. It's like, it's after the fact, you know, you need to kind of jump in here, like this Campbell fight, and appreciate it when he's in his pomp and said, this guy is unbelievable. So that perfectly lends itself to our weekly segment, Get Hyped, where we try and chat about a sporting event that you may not be paying attention to coming up this weekend and explain why it's really important, why it's brilliant, and why you need to pay it the due attention it deserves. And this week we've got a very special guest who is going to come on the line and explain that to us. It's Irish pro boxer Jason Quigley. Shall we chat to him, Mick?
I think it's time.
Let's do it. So when you see Trey, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like we're getting hyped tonight. Because if a strike, it ain't for you. We're delighted to be joined on the line now by Irish pro boxer and official ambassador for Ladbrokes, Jason Quigley. Jason, Vasily Lomachenko against Luke Campbell this weekend. Arguably, I'd say in a lot of people's eyes, the best boxer pound for pound in the world right now. Explain to us how good he is and why we need to be paying attention to this fight.
This is a massive fight, and this is something that people don't call Vasily Lomachenko the Matrix for no reason. He is special. He does things that other fighters and past fighters have never done before. He's brought a new dimension to boxing, and this is one of the best fights coming up, because you don't only have Vasily Lomachenko, but you have Luke Campbell, also another Olympic gold medalist from the amateurs, like Lomachenko, coming now fighting for world honours, for a world title. And this is something that doesn't happen very often in the professional game, that you get two Olympic champions coming all the way to the top in the professional game. And this is going to be a massive, massive fight. It's going to be very exciting. There's going to be a lot of tactics in this fight. And it's going to be very special to watch, I think.
Luke Campbell, a lot of Irish people will know him, unfortunately, from him beating John Donovan in the Olympic final in 2012. He's 33-1 with Ladbrokes to win this fight. Does he have any hope going into this? Obviously, the last fight that was televised in the UK from Lomachenko was a bit of a disappointment. This hopefully should be a better one.
Well, look, this is the reason that everybody loves boxing, because no matter what, one shot can change a fight. You had Lomachenko that boxed Salido in his second professional fight, and Salido is a rough, tough, come-forward fighter that hurt Lomachenko in a few of the rounds and eventually went on to beat him by a majority decision. But Lomachenko has been dropped by Jorge Linares, and Lomachenko started out his boxing career at featherweight. He moved up to super feather, and now he's in at lightweight. And Luke Campbell is a fully fledged lightweight champion. And he started his career at that weight. He's at that weight now at the minute. And he's tall, he's long, he's rangy. He's probably going to bring more power than Lomachenko twice into this fight. But I think physically, Lomachenko, if anybody has watched him throughout the years, Lomachenko has done all sorts of wrestling, grappling, everything like that. Even when he's not boxing training, he's in with MMA stars. He's in doing all the grappling and everything like that there. He's done wrestling as a kid. He's a very diverse fighter, and he's got great footwork. He's got great abilities all around. And going back to the question, can Luke Campbell pull this off? This is boxing, and one shot can change everything. We've seen cracks in Lomachenko's game with Linares. Linares wouldn't be as tall, wouldn't be as big of a puncher as Luke Campbell, but he did end up putting Lomachenko on his ass. And I think that Luke Campbell can do the very same and hurt him even more.
What have you made of Campbell's pro career so far, Jason? I just like... He's someone that I think would have, people in Britain especially, would have had just a lot of hopes for coming in. But, you know, he's had two losses on his record, both of them split decisions to Mendy and Linares. Like, you know, he has been, you know, he's not somebody that you would completely write off. He hasn't set the world on fire the way they would have hoped for, but he's had a pretty good run. Obviously, he got that win back against Mendy as well.
Yeah, like I think with Luke Campbell, he had a lot of weight on his shoulders coming from being Olympic champion, and he didn't only win the Olympic gold medal, he did it in London. It made it even more special. He got even more of a bigger name for it. I think Luke Campbell's style doesn't let him set the world on fire as a boxer. He's a very long, rangy fighter, doesn't really get mixed up in a fight or a war that the paying people in seats want to see: blood, sweat, tears, people up and down on their bums, you know what I mean? And I think that Nick Campbell is going to be in with a big, big shot. And I think with the pressure that he had on him early on, it took him a while to kind of get away from his amateur style of boxing. And now he's been trained with Shane McGuigan, who I think personally is one of the top trainers out there at the minute. And Shane is definitely going to bring more to his game, more physicality, more putting power into his punches, taking him a wee bit more away from that side of amateur style boxing. And that's going to give Luke Campbell confidence. And I've been listening to a few of his interviews recently as well, and he says that he's in a great place now, you know what I mean? And his confidence is high. I can see it through his interviews. He's excited about this fight, and I can see it in his eyes that he believes that he can win. And any man getting into the ring with that kind of belief can cause upset. But he is in against the Matrix and Lomachenko, and he's something special, and it's going to take a lot to beat him.
If Lomachenko does win this fight, and if he wins it easily enough, like in terms of, I think for us, for general sports fans trying to appreciate arguably the greatest boxer, possibly could go down as the greatest boxer pound for pound of all time, what should we be looking out for here? Like, Steve McKenna sparred him, said he's incredibly quick. Luke Campbell was I was reading that Luke Campbell was sparring with three people in the ring at once to try and prepare for Lomachenko. Obviously, as you're saying, he's called the Matrix. What stylistically should we be watching out for to just fully take in and appreciate how good a boxer this guy is?
Well, I think what I look as a fellow boxer and somebody that looking at this sport in maybe a different way than the normal person, I see Lomachenko very relaxed, very controlled as soon as he gets into the ring. You'll never see Lomachenko going in there and stopping a guy in one round, and I'm going to eat my words now if he does go into but, you know, you'll never see him actually going in and banging a guy out of there in one or two rounds. Lomachenko gets in there very relaxed, very controlled, has a game plan, and he goes through the gears. He starts out first, second gear, and he goes up through the ranks and the gears. And you'll see that throughout the fight. He gets in there in the first round, he studies up his opponent, doesn't throw a lot of shots, does a lot of head moving, does a lot of footwork, everything like that there. Just more or less sizing up his opponent. And I think that this could take him a few more rounds longer in this fight because Luke Campbell is so tall, he's so long, he's so rangy. I was actually at Luke Campbell's fight when he fought Linares over in LA. I commentated on that fight, and Luke Campbell showed Linares too much respect early on. I was surprised how much Linares got inside Luke Campbell early on and was able to land clean shots. If Luke Campbell does the same with Lomachenko, it could be an early night. Luke Campbell has to get in there full of confidence. He has to get in there with his game plan. He needs to hit and hurt Lomachenko early on and let him know that he's there and he means business, because Lomachenko will do his basic routine of just getting in there from the first two or three rounds, sizing you up, and then going to work on you. So this is going to be a special fight tactically for people watching, because as I said there now previously, it's going to be a slow enough start. I think they're going to do a lot of sizing up of each other, because obviously Luke Campbell is firing with three opponents, so he's going to get in there thinking, what's going to be coming at me?
Head will be going everywhere.
So he's not just going to go in there and start throwing shots left, right, and center. He's going to eye up his opponent and Lomachenko, and Lomachenko's going to do the same, because Lomachenko hasn't faced anybody as tall, as long, as rangy as Luke Campbell. And I think this is what it's going to be. I think it's going to be a very tactical fight early on. I think that Lomachenko, if Luke Campbell doesn't show him no respect, will find it difficult for the first few rounds. But I can see Lomachenko getting past that and breaking Luke Campbell down with a points decision or a late stoppage.
Interesting. Points decision is 5-2 here. If you were to pick a round, what round would you go for here? Obviously, we are here with Ladbrokes. This is the tough question for your prediction. Yeah. What, pick your round out of 12.
Well, if I was going now for a Lomachenko stoppage, I would probably be, the 10th round is sticking out in my mind. The 10th round and past that, you know, 10, 11, 12. But if I was going on it, I'd probably go the 10th round, because I think it's going to take him that little bit extra to break him down. It's going to take him a few more rounds then to start hurting him and taking his heart out of the game, and then he could do the job then in the 10th round. That's my prediction anyway.
Interesting. 11-1 with Ladbrokes for a 10th round stoppage, and as we're saying, 5-2 for points going the full distance in favour of Lomachenko.
Yeah, definitely. It's worth looking at the later rounds anyway. Jason, before we let you go, just a kind of a quick question about your own career. You know, like obviously that disappointment in July, I know you're taking some time out now before you get back in the ring, but just wondering if there's kind of like plans afoot for a return, or what are you looking at the moment?
Yeah, I'm looking to get back into the ring by the end of the year now. Obviously, taking my first loss was... Surprisingly, it wasn't as difficult as I thought it might have been. You know what I mean? I thought it might have... This will probably sound wrong that I've been more disappointed, but of course I was disappointed, but I thought it might have got me a little more. I've actually stayed very very positive and very confident from the fight, because I know that I didn't perform well and I got beat. If I had performed to my best and got beat, then I'd be able to ask myself questions, you know. So I didn't perform well, and Turiano performed well. Hats off to him. I think he's going to go on now and get a world title shot, and fair play to him. But for me, since my fight, I had 2 or 3 days off after the fight. I went down into LA, and then after that, I was straight back home and in the gym, just taking over, keeping in shape. And I've been taking a few notes out of Lomachenko's book. I've been back playing a bit. I hope Oscar De La Hoya is listening. I've been back playing a bit of hurling, a bit of Gaelic, and everything I got there. Just keeping the fitness up and everything as well. But I'm back in the boxing gym now in the next week or two, and I'll be pushing on now to get a fight date back in the end of the year now. I'm pushing on, and the hopes and dreams of becoming a world champion is still there. And I'm going to push forward to make that achievable and a possibility.
So the GAA didn't suck you back in. We won't be expecting you trying to stop maybe a potential 6 in a row for the Dubs next year with Donegal.
Well, you never know. I've been performing pretty well back up here in Donegal. A surprise appearance might be on the horizon.
Good stuff. Just, thanks very much for chatting to us.
Top stuff, lads. Appreciate it. All the best.
Mick, I am suitably hyped now after listening to Jason. What a man. He'd get you excited about going to Bass.
Yeah, Jason's always been just somebody that I've just been really, really interested in. I was really happy to have a chat with there, and I can't wait to see him back in the ring as well. I know that's separate from the getting hyped about Lomachenko, but really good to see that his attitude is so good about kind of having that setback. So, yeah. Look, that's something we'll talk to him about again. He'll be on the show again. But Lomachenko Campbell. I am now in the camp of thinking that Campbell could hurt him. And yeah. It could be a good scrap. He's not going to win, but that it was it's a real test for Lomachenko. Yep. And that's more than I was 20 minutes ago.
The other thing is, and we mentioned it earlier on in the show as you open up, but the more this show continues and the more people we talk to, the more I'm having to cancel all my weekend plans because I just keep adding sporting things that are happening at the weekend that I'm going to have to watch. And I wonder, is our next guest, Mr. Sean Meehan, who is joining us in studio, going to do the same for us? Sean, you've a lot to live up to here. You've got Ferris, we've got Quigley. What are you going to bring to the table?
Nowhere near as many medals.
Or belts.
I do have my DDSL under 11 C League medal, winner's medal.
It's not bad.
I played every match, never got taken off. So I don't know whether Stephen Ferris and Jason Quigley.
I have a credit union quiz trophy.
Oh,
two of them, in fact.
Not bad. I won the Rathcarn under 12s 7-a-side tournament. 3 years out of 4 and was only overage for 2 of those years.
I won a great trophy for winning a penalty shootout competition in first year.
Anyway, let's stop cutting through all our roll of honours. Sean is in here to talk about our 1-2-3 football picks in a minute. But first of all, it's time for the big shout.
Right, hold it. Hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't. Get round. No, don't. Bloody.
The big shout is our and your opportunity to win 2 cakes and a sports biography. It's that special segment with that incredible prize where every week we task our listeners to come up with a shout that is 25-1 or greater for the sporting weekend. We also task one of the people on the podcast to come up with one as well. Sean, it was yours last week. You had to come up with something. You came up with Crystal Palace to get a penalty, to score that penalty, Milijevic to score it.
Yes.
But United to win in the end. Literally the opposite of everything you predicted happened.
No,
Crystal Palace lost.
Sorry, it was also a double.
Yeah, I also...
I forget.
It was a double.
I said it on the podcast. I said, the first leg is an absolute banker.
Yeah.
Even though it occurred like the day after. It was Spurs and Newcastle. And I just presumed that Newcastle were goosed.
Yeah.
And Spurs would run out easy winners. So it was Spurs over 1.5 goals in the first half. Not just in the game. In the first half. And
that was 21-10, I think. We considered it a banker.
Oh yeah, but that's
no, dumb. And then they never scored at all.
And Luka Milivojevic to score, but Crystal Palace to lose.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that came to about 36-1. So I'm sorry to anybody that might have...
You're off Big Shout Judy this week. I'm off Big Shout Judy this week because I messed up the week before and we're somehow come back around to the man who screwed up the first week.
Yep, I'm back on the ball. It's in my court right now.
No listener and wins, I presume. We haven't given any cakes away so far, have we?
There hasn't been a single listener to get even close so far. But if you think you can, and there's so much opportunity this weekend, there's so much sport on, be sure to email thegaffer@balls.ie or get in touch with us on social @balls.ie. Get your suggestion in, 25-1 or greater odds, and it needs to come off, and you could win yourself two cakes in
a
sports biography.
What type of cake? Like we're not talking about like a Swiss roll here or a gâteau log.
I was about to say a Madeira cake or something.
We're talking really about like from a bakery.
Are we? Jeez, I don't know if the budget will stretch to that.
All right, okay, sorry.
We'll see.
Back to the gâteau. If you want it freshly baked 6 years ago in a factory, then...
Look, we're going to be at home baking the cakes ourselves. I make a killer Kinder Bueno cake. But anyway, I'll be making it for myself this weekend after my incredible 25-1 or greater shot comes off. Because my big shout this week, I've come back to the sport I love so well and I know so well. I don't know. Look, my football predictions aren't working. My GAA predictions aren't working. My rugby predictions aren't coming off either. But my golf, I cannot be beaten on golf.
It's true.
You thought the season was over, but it's not. Because you know what's happening this weekend? The European Masters. And I know everything there is to know now about the European Masters. Ask me anything.
Name me the 2004 winner of the European Masters.
Couldn't name the 2018 winner, to be honest. Oh, I could. It's, what's his
Nobody
face?
Asked you.
He's going for three in a row, but I can't think of remember his name. Matt Fitzpatrick, the former quarterback. But anyway, that's not the point.
Confusing Ryan Fitzpatrick and Matt Ryan, I think. But anyway,
that's not the point. We're not interested in favourites for the European Masters. You see, I was looking further down the field. I was looking for big odds, right? And I've been reading around. We do our tipster table for horse racing here at Balls, where we look at all the tipsters and see what, you know, who people are tipping up. And that not just one tipster, but a lot of people are talking about. A lot of people talking about Alexander Bjork at 66-1. But I'm more interested in the tale of Andrew Beef Johnston. He is 60-1. And just have a listen to an interview he gave earlier this summer after he shot a round of 62 in the Scottish Open.
Brilliant round of 62, a career low round of 62. Just sum that one up from your point of view.
It's a nice feeling, yeah. I guess it's been a hard year. So, yeah, I'm happy.
Clearly an emotional time for you. You've been very open and honest about some of the issues you've had. Does this really feel like the road to recovery is very much on?
Yeah, definitely. I've tried so hard in the last year. To come out and shoot a score like that is just such a nice feeling.
Yeah, so Andrew has been very open and honest about his struggles with mental health in more recent times. And he's come back into form this year, and it's just an incredible story. He finished 10th in the Scandinavian Masters most recently. And so, I've been sucked in by just such a lovely person he is and such a great character he is, and also the fact that he's actually in decent form. A few different people have been tipping him up. He's 60-1. So this weekend, it's unlikely that the big shout is going to come off, that he's going to win it at 60-1. But as an each-way bet, I don't think you can look past him. So an each-way bet, you can't look past him.
Well, you've given me reason to back Beef, yeah, or at least in my own head. I'm willing for this to come through now.
The Irish farmers will be delighted to hear that shot.
Yep, Beef is back. Beef is back in the big time. So we're almost finished. We've almost previewed the biggest mammoth weekend of sport you could imagine. But we have to do our 1-2-3 picks first of all. So if you're new to 1-2-3, it's a game on Ladbrokes you can play for absolutely free, where every week they will pick three of the football fixtures coming up. You are tasked with correctly predicting the score in each of those games. If you correctly predict one, you get a euro free bet. If you get two of them right, you get a free 5 euro free bet. And if you can correctly predict all three scores, you win 100 euro cash. We've been playing it throughout since the start of the season in the office. And there has been some big, big moves in the leaderboard. Mick, you're one of them.
I am. And I could pick 3-1, as listeners will know, in the Liverpool-Arsenal game. You boys convinced it was 3-2, both of you. So that's just, I was one up. It was my first time playing Ladbrokes 1-2-3, where I've been going into the second game with still having a chance to win 100 euro. It was very exciting. And then Spurs played Newcastle.
Unfortunately.
The gobshites.
Unfortunately, myself and John haven't had that joy of
imagine losing to Newcastle at home when you're Spurs.
Newcastle could prove everybody wrong and end up in the top four. That's my prediction for the rest of the season. No, that is not,
not really a real prediction.
Let's put a little disclaimer at the end of the show for that. But we have a couple of other movers. Dylan Ryan has joined you in the lead, the overall lead in the balls.ie table so far. He got another score right. I think he had the same. He had Bournemouth and Man City right. So he's moved on to 2 points. A few more and 1 point each. Myself and Sean have no points so far, but this is the weekend where it's all going to change. Isn't that right, Sean?
I'm confident that I might look myself into just one.
Well, I you get a free bet as well, like, you know, so it's actually, you know, it's not just even getting one just for the scoreboard.
Yeah, exactly. So the games this weekend are Burnley against Liverpool, Rangers against Celtic, and Arsenal against Spurs. So Sean, we'll turn to you first. What is your score prediction for Burnley against Liverpool?
I'm going to go with Liverpool running out 3-1 victors.
3-1 victors?
Yeah.
No clean sheet for Liverpool yet.
Burnley have put it up to everybody they played against this season.
It's funny the way Mick last week decided that he predicted that Ashley Barnes wouldn't score a goal again all season. And then he scored against Man City.
Two things happened this week. It was, I literally just, because I was watching the rugby and I was in and out of the house and I was listening to the radio. And I was like, and Ashley Barnes has scored again. And I went, ah, for the love and honour of... How could Ashley Barnes make you look like an idiot?
He did. And will he make you look like an idiot again this weekend? Mick, what score are you going for in Burnley-Liverpool?
I'm going for 2-0 in this game. And I'll tell you why. Liverpool have conceded in their three games so far. They've won 2-1, 3-1, 4-1 actually. So logic should say they should win 5-1 in this. But no, I think they'll win 2-0 because I think Burnley's start to the season has been really, really good, really positive. And I think that they will actually give Liverpool headaches, but I think that Liverpool will obviously just have too much for them and will find a way to win the game, kind of what we talked about last week really. But I think 2-0 is a reasonable score. I think they'll just start to tighten it up a little bit.
Look at the Burnley-Liverpool game. Ashley Barnes has caused a lot of problems so far, but as we know, both the Arsenal and Man City defence, central defence, are renowned soft lads. Virgil van Dijk is no soft lad. He's going to be able for that physicality. I'm also thinking that they're going to keep their first clean sheet of the season. I'm going for Liverpool 3, Burnley 0.
Okay.
I hope that Ashley Barnes once again proves everybody wrong and just scores one. Just score one, Ashley. That's all I need.
Rangers against Celtic, Sean. What do you got?
I'm going for Rangers 2-1 against Celtic.
Oh!
I feel as though, like, Gerrard kind of... He has it against Lennon. Like, at the end of last season, they ran out. They beat them at Ibrox. It's at Ibrox again. Both teams are 100% in the Ladbrokes Premiership this season. But I just feel as though maybe Celtic are a tiny bit wobblier. Maybe. I don't know. Everything goes out. Form goes out the window when this fixture comes around. So it's kind of a shot in the dark.
Mick?
I think Celtic are going to win mainly because of the fact that everybody has predicted either a Rangers win or a draw this week. And I kind of think that it's being based a little bit too much on just assuming that Rangers are going to come good. So they have got a little bit better. Celtic are a good bit better than them. They struggled in a couple of games, but they tend to beat them more often than not. I think they'll still win. I think it'll be close. I'm going to go for 2-1.
2-1.
I think Rangers could even take the lead in that game.
There's a hint of, like, if you're a parent and you're always kind of downplaying your old child's achievements or do you know what they're capable of, like, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. Like that, we're kind of just kind of scolding Celtic almost by saying that Rangers are right back in this. That being said, I've chickened out and gone for 1-1. So look, that's a win for Celtic, one of us, a win for Rangers the other, and I've gone for a draw. So you're gonna have to make your own mind up and get on to ladbrokes.com and play 1-2-3 right now if you think different. Well, you're going to think different to the two of us anyway. Arsenal against Spurs, 4:30 on Sunday. Sean, where are you going with this one? Are you going to desert Spurs now after they let you down last weekend?
Well, listen, as anybody who has been reading my articles on Spurs so far this season will realise, I have it out for Mauricio Pochettino. So I'm going 2-1 Arsenal. That's it. That's just purely it.
Go on, Mick.
2-2.
2-2?
Yeah. I think both teams are full of calamity. Spurs have already had a 2-2 this year, which actually works against me, I think, a little bit in this prediction. But I think there could be a bit of a ding-dong North London derby sort of feel to this game. You know, maybe there's a few, like, random goals, OGs, fights, red cards. I don't know. I think both teams could do with a game like that, to be honest.
Yeah. I look at this, like, I think Spurs could be secretly in terrible form. And when I say terrible, as in we're all thinking that there is a top four or that there's a top three, really, and then a gap to down to the next three. That we're talking about, you know, the possibility of like United or a Chelsea or an Arsenal missing out on that top six. Spurs, the gap could have closed an awful lot in the wrong direction. Not that the other teams are catching up with the top three, but that Spurs have come right back down to them, especially with the problem of the issue of Christian Eriksen, the ongoing issue with, you know, Vertonghen as well. Danny Rose almost went in the summer. There are a lot of players there that are kind of, their future's uncertain. Pochettino's future, therefore, is also uncertain. And I think the wheels could come off this sooner rather than later. I'm going for 2-0 Arsenal.
I can't say I disagree with what you were saying there.
I agree as well, actually, as well. I just don't trust Arsenal. It's like when Arsenal are at their worst and Spurs were going out, like nearly being challenged for the title, Arsenal go and beat them in this fixture. It's now that Spurs are there for the taking is when you think that Arsenal are going to somehow manage to balls it up.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. Like you have to have wild logic when you're picking the actual scores of a game. It's a very difficult thing to do. We don't have a great success rate. So I'm going with whatever comes into my head, to be honest, Mark.
Excellent. Well, look, as we said, if you want to win €100 cash or even win a €5 fee bet or a €1 fee bet, like we said, if you get one or two right, get on to ladbrokes.com right now. You can play for absolutely free and make your own score predictions for those three games. It's nearly time for us to go. I have one last bold prediction to make for the weekend.
I didn't quite go
with it as my big shout, but it's more of a Mark's Waters this weekend. This week, as anyone who listens to our new football podcast, which you can get every Monday on the Ball Study podcast feed, will know, I am playing my fantasy football wildcard. I've got rid of a lot of dead wood from this squad that I'm unhappy with. So you can take it for sure, an absolute guaranteed bet. The odds aren't in yet, but you'd imagine this is also around 25-1. A treble. Youri Tielemans to score, Harry Kane to score, and Gylfi Sigurdsson to score this weekend. It's going to happen. It's guaranteed. Finito.
I don't think Sigurdsson kicked the ball against Villa. He was absolutely muck. Tielemans, I'm so glad you've got rid of him, because that poor kid was being held back by your...
I picked him up to a point.
You talked about him so much,
it.
Like he does. That man could never live up to that kind of height.
Like he's also not a goal scorer as well.
No, but he sets up. He set up everything. He averaged from when he joined Leicester City in January last year. He averaged over 5 points a game in fantasy football.
See, that was stuck in your head there.
And he's also he's not a goal scorer, but he is going to score this weekend because I sold him. That's all this prediction is based on.
Before we finish up, can I say one thing?
Go on.
We've an All-Ireland football final to look forward to this weekend. We've got another great week in the Premier League. Ireland have created a massive rugby international now because of what they've done to themselves in the build-up so far, right?
They've accidentally made this into a massive game.
And I'm looking into this weekend worried about Beef Johnson more than anyone else after you set him up to bloody win the European Masters. I don't know, what have you done to me here?
Beef Johnson and Ashley Barnes hopefully not score against Liverpool. Well, look, thank you very much for listening today. As we said, it's been a mammoth show because we are looking forward to one of the biggest weekends in sport of the year. If you have not subscribed, please do subscribe to the Build Up Podcast. You can find us on Balls.ie Podcast or the Build Up on Balls.ie Podcast on all good podcast apps. Please rate, review the show, and as always, get in touch with us on all our social media channels. But until we chat to you next week, mind yourself. We'll be right back.